Okay, hi there, and welcome to today's World War One Commonwealth Contribution podcast. Following on from last week's podcast on letters home as creative outlets for soldiers, we're very excited to have Daljeet Nagra joining us today. Daljeet is an established poet, having published collections with Faber and Faber. Recently, he wrote an article for The Guardian reflecting on the horrors and hopes that soldiers from undivided India wrote home about from the front lines. Today, he's going to talk to us about that article and his personal reflections on what he discovered. Firstly, just wanted to say thank you so much for agreeing to join us today. What was it exactly that sort of inspired you to look into these letters?
Well, I think the first thing is I wasn't actually aware of the extent of involvement by Indian soldiers in the First World War. I'd always known for years that Indian soldiers are there because you see the odd photograph and you see these brown-skinned people, you wonder where they're coming from.
Yeah.
So that interested me anyway. And you know, given we're coming up to the centenary, it felt quite important to me to take a kind of responsible interest. So I was invited by the British Library to have a look at some of these letters, and I sort of leapt at the opportunity. I was very excited. I think that was on the back of being commissioned by Carol Ann Duffy for a book of poems based on the First World War writings, and I'd picked a poem by Sarojini Naidu.
Oh, wow.
Who'd written a poem called The Gift of India, and the poet personifies India. India's sacrificing her people for the cause of the British Empire.
Yeah.
And in a sense, the poem is partly a feeling of injustice, but also partly a recognition of the great achievements of Indians. So the gift is double-edged, I guess.
Yeah. So you said that you didn't sort of know a whole lot about this before you went into it. I mean, did you sort of do any research before it, or what sort of really struck you from what you read in terms of the size of the contribution or the sort of emotional aspects of it that came out, etc.?
So I went to the British Library and actually looked at original letters, which is very exciting, just to see these kind of, you know, in some cases actually handwritten letters by soldiers themselves, but mostly, I mean, a lot of the soldiers would have been illiterate.
Yeah.
So that had been, you know, written by somebody else. So, and just seeing there were hundreds and hundreds of letters there, I mean, thousands of letters. And just, so I guess one of the things that struck me was that some of the soldiers were out fighting in France, and they were receiving letters from home, and the letters, families writing about the plague back
wow.
home, and how people were dying back home. And suddenly, I mean, I'd never imagined it like that. So you got this brutal kind of event going on in France where many people are dying, and then you got this brutal event going on back in India, which
yeah.
is caused by, you know, viruses, nature. So one's a nature-led thing, and one's a kind of man-made
yeah.
war. But on either side, the Indians are suffering.
So you've got two fronts, haven't you? You've got the war front, and then you've got this sort of, you know, medical sort of disease front as well that people are facing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's biological war that's going on in India, and these poor soldiers obviously want to be home, looking after their loved ones, and then they're probably panicked. So, in a sense, some of the Indian soldiers are more worried about whether their family were alive
yeah.
rather than the other way around, which
yeah.
is really mind-blowing, isn't it, in terms of the commitment to the First War from the Indian soldiers.
Yeah, and the loss
they
of life.
They were not coming from privilege
yeah.
at all.
And so when you were, obviously, the Indian Army was a standing army at the time, so they were, you know, these soldiers were called up and they sort of had to go and fight. But did you come across any sort of reasoning in any of the letters about sort of, you know, well, I felt a sense of duty or sort of anything like that when you were going over them?
Yeah, I mean, there's that kind of phrase about eating the salt of the king.
Yeah.
There's a great phrase, you know, obviously that links to Gandhi as well, and there's, you know, not taking the salt. And in the letters, soldiers frequently mention we have been eating the salt of the king,
yeah.
i.e. because we have eaten our master's salt, we have to pay in kind.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not even a begrudging, a moany thing. It's a reminder of duty,
yeah.
a kind of commitment. I love that, the power, the ferocity of that devotion.
Mm-hmm. To a country that you've never even been to and, you know, you don't really know very much about, but you still feel that sort of... That relationship with it.
Yeah, absolutely. It comes through letter after letter, soldiers expressing gratitude that they're serving. And I think some of them see it as a religious devotion.
Mm-hmm.
And religion is mentioned frequently. And, you know, that lives are in God's hands and God's work is to fight in the First World War, that they must fight in the First World War. So for many soldiers, the devotion is partly to king and empire, but also to God, because it's God's will. Yeah. Whether they were Hindu, Sikh or Muslim.
I suppose sort of having this overarching sort of sense of religious duty as well sort of pushes them a bit further, and, you know, it reinforces that, yes, I should be here and this is what I'm doing. And sort of when you were looking into...
Yeah, sorry, just want to stop you there.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting point, because in the letters, you rarely see soldiers moaning.
Really?
They just don't seem to whinge on or anything. So I found that really remarkable, that stoicism, because I think it's a religious thing. They see it as their God-given right to be here in France fighting. This is what they're born for. And references to destiny are frequently made. Fate, destiny, those sort of words.
And I think, well, when we've sort of been doing our research, we've come across quite a few sort of soldiers from the Punjab, etc., who have come from sort of agricultural families, and they've sort of joined the army to sort of gain a skill set or to get away from that hand-to-mouth agricultural sort of lifestyle. And did you come across sort of any culture shocks that came through in the letters from, you know, these people who, some of whom may have never even sort of left their villages or left, you know, their regions within India, and then they're sent to these sort of far-off places? Did you come across any of that at all?
Yeah. The things I came across, the kind of shock, it wasn't the negative shock, because I think they expected, you know, difference.
Yeah.
But it was the sense of luxury in the West. Mm-hmm. That there were roads and the trees were organised and there weren't animals, you know, milling around everywhere. This sense of these parks, everything was so ordered.
Yeah.
and tidy and rational. And soldiers frequently mention the beauty that you know, one of them talks about France. France is Paris. Paris is paradise. They talk about, you know, being in Brighton, going out and just marvelling at things.
Yeah.
So I think it's just they were awakened to the fact that their own, you know, poverty, their impoverishment compared to life in the West.
Do you think sort of soldiers seeing, you know, this development and the pace of this development and, you know, the soldiers who returned home after the war, do you think this really fed into this, you know, the nationalist sentiments within India that actually we can do this ourselves and we can build a country up ourselves? We don't need to be sort of under the yoke of the British Empire anymore.
That's a really good and important point, I think, because, you know, these ordinary, uneducated Indians were seeing for the first time what the motherland was really like.
Yeah.
And how different it was. Yeah, and absolutely, when you're going back home to your plague-ridden country,
mm-hmm.
or plague-ridden North India, you are going to feel a sense of injustice.
Yeah,
even in the killing fields of France, they frequently talk about the sheer beauty of France, the landscape, the roads and everything. And they're aware, the Indian soldiers are aware, that this is a different world.
Yeah,
and, you know, they're at the losing end of things.
And did sort of soldiers talk about their relationships with their white counterparts and sort of how they were treated? Was there any animosity, or did they feel as if they were equals, or were they surprised sort of by their treatment at all?
I didn't see anything of that sort. I think that might be an issue with the censorship.
Yeah.
And I read somewhere that soldiers were aware of within a few months that their letters were being read.
Mm-hmm.
So that would have been a very tricky area for them to tread on, you know.
Yeah.
I think they were happy just to talk about events. I mean, once or twice, some of the letters talk about how the Sikhs and Muslims, Hindus, all been buried in the same site.
Oh, how really?
How offensive that is. Yeah, one of the letters in particular mentioned, I saw it in another letter. But I think that was dealt with, because the censor, in his, they frequently compile these reports,
yeah.
and actually mentioned that letter to the government. So a government would have been aware of religious sensitivities. So that was more a case of getting things right rather than persistently
yeah.
being insensitive.
Because there does seem like there was actually an effort to accommodate them. They were given food that they were used to from back home. And, you know, if they had a British white commanding officer, he would sit, you know, if they were going to have a paratha for breakfast, then he would do that because he wanted to feel a sense of sort of solidarity with his men. But equally, we've also sort of come across sort of feelings of being paraded around, etc., and being introduced to, you know, royalty just so they could feel as if, you know, they had contributed something, whereas that compared to the actual loss of life that obviously these soldiers saw on a daily basis. I think, do you think that would have been something that would have been difficult for them to deal with, to think, well, you know, we're seeing all this death and destruction about us and yet we're sort of being wheeled out for sort of PR exercises or...
Yeah, I think it's difficult on both ends, isn't it? Because mm-hmm. the British were, I think they were genuinely grateful and they wanted the king to be there, and there was the Indian Comfort Fund, and it's
yeah.
called the ICS, And, you know, so money was being raised to look after the Indian soldiers. So, you know, and from the letters, you can tell they're really well treated when they're in hospitals in, you know, Brighton Pavilion or, you know, I think Hastings and places like that. Mm-hmm. And they write really enthusiastically about the way they've been treated. And as you said, they've been given blankets and food and clothes. So they are being well looked after. And I think the English went out the way, or the British went out their way to make sure the Indians felt accommodated, because as the war deepened, they must have thought that we might need more Indian soldiers.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they were completely indispensable.
They need to recruit, didn't they?
Yeah. I mean, they stretched the war effort, you know, to make sure that that effectively the Allies won eventually. And, I mean, do you think there is anything that sort of people today can take from these experiences that you've read about in terms of the Commonwealth contribution, specifically the Indian contribution to the First World War? Because, as you said, it's an area that is little known about. And do you still feel it is relevant for people to know about it today?
Yeah, well, as in British, as a sense of British consciousness of our own history, if you think about First World War, we can no longer ignore the Indians. Over a million Indians fought in the First World War. That's just a fact. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there weren't Caribbeans involved because of the martial races theory.
Yeah.
They wanted the North Indians. So there's a massive contribution. And also, I think also for young Asians living in Britain, they need to think, you know, when you're 16 or 17, you know, your equivalents from India about 100 years ago were coming over to fight on behalf of the British Empire and giving their lives for this country. And we just need to, students need to think about the implications of that. It can be good or bad, but whatever, they need to think about that. It's a really important event, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
And we're thinking really of Sikhs and Muslims in particular, aren't we? And the kind of also the negative perception that Muslims have in this country, the negative imaging we have of Islam and Muslim.
Yeah.
And yet you think of all those soldiers, a lot of those soldiers that came over and fought on behalf of the British and died for the British were Muslims. It's an incredible story in that sense, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it definitely feeds into
Daily Mail.
Yeah, a sense of identity, really. We'll try. I think, yeah, thanks so much for answering our questions today. Really appreciate it. That's the end of today's podcast. And if you've got any comments, feel free to leave them in the box below.